Sicha for Parsha Veschanan is in Volume 2, Chelik Beis of the Kutei Sichas. The Rebbe begins, Heinteke said, it says, Oz Yavdu Moshe Sholish Orim, Lonus Shomer Reteach, that then Moshe set aside three cities that are the cities of refuge, where a person who accidentally kills another person has to go into exile, has to hide in those three cities. Cities of refuge. The roads that led to the cities of refuge, the Gemara tells us, were wide and well-established roads. They were 32 yards wide or 32 feet wide, and at each crossroad, at each fork in the road, there was a sign that pointed to the cities of refuge, and the sign would say Miklot, Miklot. In order for the person to be able to get there quickly and find his way easily to his city of refuge. And since this was the physical condition and the physical preparations for the physical cities of refuge, it must also be true in the spiritual Arim Miklot, the spiritual cities of refuge, where the neshama, where the godly soul runs to hide from the vengeance of the animal soul. And that is the words of Taisa. As it says, the words of Taisa are a refuge. So this is the spiritual refuge where the neshama goes to refresh itself and get away from the animal soul. So in the spiritual city of refuge, these same conditions must also be reflected, must also be true. And in fact, it's really the other way around. It's not that what exists in the physical exists also in the spiritual, but the other way around. Because it exists in the spiritual, that's why it exists in the physical as well, because it devolves from the spiritual and comes out into the physical. As the Shalosh says concerning the fact that Torah speaks in human language, that's only the way we perceive it, the Shalosh says. Really, the Torah is speaking about spiritual things. Only we pick up on the physical meaning of those words as they come out in the physical. And so it is with all matters of Torah, including also the cities of refuge. All the details that we see in the physical city of refuge are there and are what they are because they are devolved from the spiritual cities of refuge in which all of these details exist. Now, Ilu Zachinu, if we merited, if we were on the level, if we were pure, then we would be able to see all of Torah as it is above in the spiritual, and know from that what is going on in the physical as well. We would be following a direction from above downward. We would start off with the higher and lead to the lower, to the physical. Because everything in the physical world has its origins in the spiritual reality. And so when we understand the spiritual reality, then we would know, we could predict how the physical reality is going to turn out. As is expressed in the story where the Zebra Rashab was very strict on not interrupting between the washing of the hands and the saying of the motzi. Although in halacha, legally, an interruption between the washing and the saying of the motzi would consist of speaking or waiting a long time, allowing a long time to elapse. But thinking or listening to somebody else speaking is not halachically considered an interruption. Yet the Rebbe Rashab wouldn't tolerate even a distraction in thought between the washing of the hands and the making of the motzi. And so it was one year when in the world of medicine, the medical professors had discovered an artery in the brain which facilitated memory and concentration. So the Rebbe's brother came into the room, and he was very excited about this new discovery, and he said to the Rebbe Marash during the eating that this had been discovered by the professors. The Rebbe Rashab didn't answer until after benching, and then he asked them to wait a moment, and he went into the next room, and he came back with a small manuscript of Hasidus that was written by the Mittel Rebbe. And he showed them where in that manuscript, in that Maimer, there are 6 or 7 lines where the Rebbe mentions, the Mittel Rebbe, mentions that in the brain there is this artery that is mobile. It moves, and it facilitates memory and concentration. And that's why we see that when this artery is facing the part of the brain that houses Chochmah and Bina, then it helps to remember. And when it's facing the part of the brain, when it leans towards the part of the brain that contains the Das, then it helps concentration. And that's why when a person wants to remember, he looks up, he tilts his head upwards, and when a person wants to concentrate, he tilts his head downwards. So when the Rebbe showed this to his brother, the brother said, in that case, the Mittel Rebbe was a great professor. He was a great medical scientist. So the Rebbe Rashab said to him, the Mittel Rebbe knew how the spiritual human being is put together, how the supernal human being is put together, and therefore he could predict how the physical human being works as well. So he worked his way from the reality and the spiritual to a truth also in the physical. And certainly in matters of Torah, this was a physical thing, but in the matters of Torah, certainly we should be able, if we had merited, we would be able to see how it is in the spiritual and then know how it comes out in the physical. And in fact, this is how the study of Torah will take place in the world to come after Mashiach, that we will understand the spiritual and then derive from that information about the physical. But since we're not on that level yet, so we have to study all subjects of Torah as they are in the physical, and then from that figure out how they are in the spiritual, following the path of from the bottom upwards. In the physical Ari Miklat, in the physical cities of refuge, the person who killed unintentionally goes there to find his refuge. But also, a person who killed intentionally has to go to the Ari Miklat, to the city of refuge, until his case comes to court and until it's decided what his innocence or guilt is. So even a person who killed intentionally is protected by the Ari Miklat until the court case, until it comes to court. And so it is also that in the physical city of refuge, we need to have well-paved roads leading to the cities so that people can travel easily along those roads. And that's not enough, but you also have to have signs along the road, wherever there's a crossroad or a fork in the road, to show the people which way to go. The same is true also in the spiritual Ari Miklat, in the spiritual city of refuge. Aside from the fact that the words of Torah are our refuge, and the path to the Torah has to be a well-paved and wide road, in addition to this, God also sets up signs pointing to the Ari Miklat, showing us which way to go. Because a person has freedom of choice, a person has bechira, as it says, Re'ei nasati lefanecha hayein, es hachayim ves hatev, es hamoves ves hara, I place before you today good and life, and death and evil. So a person has the choice to pick either life or death, good or bad. So if the path is wide and well paved, but there's no sign telling the person which way to go, by his bechira, he could actually choose the wrong way. He could actually choose the path of death and evil. And that's why God stands like a sign and says, miklot, miklot. He warns the person to go on the right path and not to take the wrong path. Which is why God says, ubacharta bachayim, choose life. So God is standing like a sign saying, choose life, this is the way to life. Because of our freedom of choice, which all of us have, a person is capable of choosing that which is evil, thinking that he's making the right choice. So everyone is in need of help from above, Eizer Mumaila, that God should help him and show him which is the right path. So God says, go in this direction, the direction that leads to life and to goodness, because even Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Eini yedeya be'eza derech me'richan eisi. He didn't know which direction he would be taken after he passes away. So certainly everybody else who is not on the level of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, in their freedom of choice, and particularly because of the darkness and the double darkness of the Golus of today, everyone is capable of making this terrible mistake of choosing death and thinking that it's life. And so we all need that God should help us and point us in the right direction so that we make the right choice and go in the right way. But if we want God to help us and to lead us away from the wrong choice and along the path of life and goodness, then we have to do something equal and similar to deserve it. We have to go out onto the roads where the roads are forked, and there's a choice that needs to be made, and we have to stand there and tell other Jews which way they should go. We have to go out there and scream, miklot, miklot, go in the right path, go in the path of goodness, away from the goyel hadam, away from the satan, away from the yetzahara. And this is the job and the responsibility that lies on every one of us, to place ourselves in every area of doubt, and to announce loudly and clearly which is the right way and which is the wrong way. And although this puts the person himself at the crossroads, in a place where there is a road that leads away into a bad direction, yet he shouldn't be intimidated by this. He should know that this is his job, this is the tafkid, this is the responsibility that is placed on him. As Mordechai Tzadik said in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, that a neshama comes down into this world and lives for 70, 80 years in order to do a Jew a favor, either physically or spiritually. So certainly, if a soul can spend 80 years on earth just to do a Jew a favor, then it is perfectly justified that a person should stand on the crossroads and help Jews make the right decision. And as a result of this, in reward for this, God will show the person the right path for himself, so that he'll be able to find himself on the road of life and goodness. When he comes to the crossroads, and he's standing there screaming, miklot, miklot, and he shows another person which way to go, it's possible that the person won't even listen to him. He doesn't even know if there's going to be anybody there. Doesn't know if anybody hears him at all. And even so, none of this should stop him. None of this should discourage him. He has to be a sign that points to life and to goodness. And then God will protect him, that he should find his way to the miklat, away from the yetzahara, away from the satan. And although he will feel like he hasn't accomplished anything, but he has fulfilled his obligation. And that is that he stood at the crossroads and pointed to the good and to life. And for this, God will show him the way of good and life, even though he is still an Eved Elikim and not an Eved Elikim, which means that he still has a Yetzer Hara, and his Yetzer Hara hasn't gotten any weaker in the course of time, but on the contrary, has gotten stronger because it is exercised so often. And yet this Yetzer Hara, which could lead him to make the wrong choice, God forbid, and to choose death and evil, God will protect him from it. God will, as it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ezrei Leheishiyei Meshefte Nafshi. The previous Rebbe once pointed out the difference between the Baal Shem Tov and other tzaddikim who lived in his generation. And that was that the others ran yeshivas and offered Torah knowledge to those who were seeking it and to those who would come to them to study. Whereas the Baal Shem Tov and his Talmidim, they would travel from place to place, from city to city, and from town to town, in order to meet Jews and inspire them there. And just as it is the difference between the Baal Shem Tov and the other tzaddikim, the same is also true concerning the spiritual Ari Miklat, the spiritual cities of refuge. There's a difference the way it is al pi halacha and the way it is according to Hasidus. In halacha, they would place a stone, and on the stone, on the crossroad, they would make a sign, and the sign would point in the direction of the cities of refuge. So the stone itself didn't speak to anyone, but if someone was looking for the city of refuge and could at least read, that the sign would point them in the right direction. And the same is true also in the spiritual Ari Miklat. There are people who make themselves available by going from their home cities. They go away to a place where there's a crossroads, where there is little Jewish information, and there they make themselves available like a stone for anyone who is capable of reading, that they would come to them and read what they were writing. They would find the direction to the Ari Miklat, to the city of refuge. So although this is a great sacrifice, going away from your city and living in a place where there isn't much Jewish knowledge and information, but this is certainly not enough, because we are not meant to be like a stone or like a pillar that stands in one place. There was an expression concerning a clock, that a clock is always going here and there. It's running around, it's constantly moving, and yet it's going nowhere. Doesn't move from its spot. And that's not the way Chassid is supposed to be. Because according to Chassidus, a person is not meant to be a daimim, an inanimate object. A person has to be a mahalach. He has to be a person alive, a lebedike mensch. He has to be alive and warm, and not wait until someone comes to ask for help. He has to be energetic and enthusiastic, and he has to move. If he goes somewhere and sees a Jew, he has to run to help him. He has to find a way that he can help him and guide him to the miklat. And that's the responsibility that the Rebbe placed on young people, particularly the students, yeshiva bachim, that for a couple of weeks they should travel the country or the world and scream miklat, miklat. This is the direction that leads to life and good. They should be like signs, but like living signs, not stone signs that remain stationary, but signs that are alive and that are warm and enthusiastic, that show the way to the miklat. The Gemara says, and the Rambam mentions it also in Halacha, that a person should always see himself and the world as perfectly balanced on the scale between good and evil. We must always look at a person, at every person, as being perfectly balanced. And so the next act that a person is going to do will determine which way the scales will tilt, for his merit or for the opposite. And not only this person, but the whole world, meaning all of history, all the generations to come, and all the generations that have come and gone, all of it makes up a balanced scale. the good and the evil of all the generations are all balanced. And with the very next act, the entire history and the entire balance of the world is dependent. And when a bracha that's traveling around in these crossroads in order to show others how to find their way back to their Father in heaven will think for a while how the whole world and all the generations that were and that will be are all balanced perfectly on the scale, and with the very next act that a Jew will do, he will tilt the world in one direction or the other, then the student will not be able to be an inanimate sign that doesn't move, but he'll be enthusiastic and intense in his desire to help a Jew find the right way, and by doing that, tilt this person and the whole world towards blessing and towards merit. He will go everywhere and find Jews everywhere and explain to them that the whole world is balanced and that this person is balanced between good and evil, even if he happens to be a terribly sinful person. But the balance is there because with one act of tshuva, in 1 hour, in 1 second, he can shift the scale to the opposite direction and make the entire condition for himself and the world one of merit and goodness. And on the other hand, he has to know that he has freedom of choice to choose the unholy, God forbid, and by doing that he could bring terrible damage, and so he has to be careful that he should choose the right path, the path that leads to life and to good. And then, having made that choice, the student, the bachur, will help him find his way towards the good. Now there are those who think that they've gone and they've traveled and they've made an effort, but they didn't accomplish much or accomplished nothing. So the truth is that that's not the decisive factor. That's not the crucial factor, whether you accomplish or you don't accomplish. We find that there's a mitzvah to search the house for chametz. So you go and you search, you spend an entire night looking for chametz, and if you don't find any chametz, there's nothing wrong, there was nothing lost or wasted, because the idea is to search for the chametz. And that he fulfilled. So the same is true also in the spiritual search for chametz. Those who travel and think that they accomplished nothing, that he wasted all that time on the roads and at the crossroads away from the centers of learning and so on, and yet accomplished nothing. So he has nothing to boast about, he has nothing to be proud of. But that doesn't change the fact that he did what he was told to do, and the reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah itself, meaning the fact that it attaches you and connects you to the commander. But what's more, although he thinks he accomplished nothing, he's exhausted and he comes back empty-handed, and his friends will have complaints to him, will criticize him, and aside from that, he has nothing to show. So, as we said before, whether you accomplish something or not is not the crucial question, but in truth, he did accomplish, but he himself doesn't know what he accomplished. But the fact that he went and he put in the effort leaves no room for doubt that he did accomplish something. As the Friedrich Rebbe said many times, in the name of his father, Chazoka l'ta'amulo she'ene chazeres veikum. It is guaranteed that any effort expended is never wasted, must bring some result. One of the ways that he accomplishes, but doesn't know that he accomplished, is that when he goes out on a shlichus mitzvah and he's traveling, the stones that he's stepping on and the road that he travels on are elevated by the fact that he is traveling or stepping on them on the way to doing his mitzvah. And in that way he purifies the atmosphere, the space itself, as is well known. But that is something that he doesn't see, and he can't put it into an account or into a report, and he wants to accomplish something not in the world in general, but he wants to accomplish something in the mission and in the purpose for which he was sent. So he wants to be able to bring Jews closer to godliness, closer to their Father in heaven. So the fact that he's elevating the stones and the roads on which he is traveling, this is not what he was sent to do. So the truth is that he accomplishes in what he was sent to do as well. And that's as follows. When a Jew is sitting in his apartment, in his house, and he looks through the window, and he sees a young man with a beard. And this reminds him of how his father or how his grandfather used to look. And he then remembers how his father told him every day, getting up in the morning, that he should say Moed Ani. And before going to sleep, he told him he should say Shema Yisrael. And as he's sitting there remembering all of this, he whispers the words of the Shema, or of the Moed Ani, to himself, to see if he still remembers. And that moves him and arouses within him a feeling of tshuva. Or a child comes home from school, and he says that there was a visitor at the school, a young man with a beard, and he was selling books on Jewish topics. And he wanted to sell the child a pamphlet or a booklet on Judaism. But the child says that he refused to buy it. When he tells his father and mother, they are reminded by this about their obligation to Yiddishkeit and to Jewish education and to raising the child as a Jew. And at that moment, their entire thinking and their entire orientation must be affected for the good. Now the truth is that if a young man goes out and feels that he accomplished nothing, or doesn't see any of his accomplishments, he should feel brokenhearted. He should feel that he was not worthy or didn't merit to have an inward, a pnimiyazdik effect on people, where he actually sat and talked about Yiddishkeit with them. But at least in the makif way, in the indirect, transcendent way, he did have an effect on the people with whom he came into contact. And the Rebbe tells the story about how a young man told him that there was a rabbi who came to Rav Abrengen once. And the rabbi is a teacher and also a principal of a school. And so when he came back from the Fabrengen, he had to tell the children about what he had seen. And he described to them young people who daven a lot, who learn a lot, who are very devoted to Yiddishkeit, and the children couldn't believe that such a thing exists in today's day and age. And so he asked, the rabbi called the young chassid who had brought him to the Fabrengen and asked him to come to the school to be a living example for the children, to show them that Judaism is very much alive, and they asked questions, and that caused an improvement in the Yiddishkeit of the entire community.